Thank you very much for coming again. And I'll try and do my best. I'm a little bit in bad shape. I had a little accident on Sunday night and I have a concussion, so I'm all right. You know, it's not serious, but I'm spaced out like anything. I can't remember names, for one thing, and other things too. So let's see. If I'm suddenly go blank, then you know why. Yesterday we spoke about prayer. Actually, what we wanted with that prayer was to discuss the point of establishing our connection with Krishna, to kind of focus. The idea is that many times we're just moving along with the circumstances without being very conscious. Sometimes they say that before you become Krishna conscious, you have to first become conscious, right? And we have to live more conscious. We join this movement and are attracted by the Sunday feast and the fragrance of the halva, and later on we discover burfis, and like that we just go along with the development of everyday life in the Hare Krishna movement, and it just pushes us along, and we're expecting that things are gonna come from it, that we are going to get our inspirations, and basically that the whole package of spiritual life will just be present, and at the right time everything will be available, and we'll just progress. However, it may not necessarily be so. Right? It may not work like that. Right? And we may find that we are that we feel something lacking, that we are, externally doing it all, the morning program, and we're reading, and so forth. We wear the right dress and say the right things, you know, or the Hare Krishna language, Jai Prabhu, bliss, nectar, Hari Bol, and all these kind of expressions.
Interrupt me, because then I'm losing it completely.
So, like that, we are sometimes going with the flow, moving in the groove. Yes. So, yesterday, the concept of prayer was to make us a little more conscious. We spoke about specifically the theme of entering into the inner room, of becoming honest and humble and going down different levels from, well, admitting that we are not pure devotees, admitting that we are having anartas, making a list of them, then, like, you know, even seeing how bad we are affected. Am I greedy? Yes, it's on the list. Oh my God, you know. Where am I greedy? How, in what ways am I greedy? Like, contemplate, become a little more conscious. And in this way, we actually can pray from the heart that we are full of vice. Then we are aware where we are. Right? So, the point I'm talking about is to approach Krishna from where we are. So, at the moment we are in these seminars, and the purpose of these seminars is particularly to some rejuvenation, some recharging of the batteries, right? Absorbing. And now we are drinking the mercy. We are, of course, we're getting it in different ways. Some of the seminars deal more with the motivation of things. Others are dealing about interacting with the world, communications. Again, others are dealing with ammunition for preachers, right? Challenge the scientists and chop them down. Right? So there's different aspects to what we're getting. But the point is that we're getting, we're recharging ourselves. So I guess this week, that is our focus. So especially taking mercy. However, one can never merely take mercy. Mercy must also be distributed. Otherwise, it dries up with time. Right? So in this spirit, we want to carry on with where we were yesterday and take the first aspect of like absorbing mercy. Before I go really deep in that, I want to at least now state some definitions of mercy, Sanskrit definitions, which are found in the scriptures. And I've given here on the second page a little list under definitions, which will give you the Sanskrit translations, or the translations of the Sanskrit from the Monier Williams Dictionary, and I'll read them for you. Daya, widespread or generalized feelings of mercy or sympathy. Kripa, compassion accompanied by tenderness, and kripalu is just another form of kripa. It says pity, or specifically refers to compassion expressed towards those whom one knows. So there is some, to some extent, there is a difference between daya and kripa. Although the two seem to be overlapping sometimes, it's not a complete hard separation of the terms, but we see that kripa seems to be more a reciprocation towards a particular service that is performed by someone, whereas daya is more the mercy given out in general. That's like, by rule of thumb, we can make that distinction. Karuna, compassion, it says as the sentiment in poetry. Okay, we'll leave it like that. Anukampan is sympathy or compassion. And prasad, now this translation I've taken from Srila Prabhupada. And Prabhupada said, prasad means mercy. Mercy, prasad means prakrista rupena siddhati. That is prasad, means completely satisfied. So when we look in the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam and we study the term mercy in the verses, then we see that mostly they use the word prasad. Right? It's all prasad. Right? Prabhupada also explained that everything is actually prasad. Right? Not only that which we eat, but one should see everything as prasad. A devotee sees everything as prasad. Right? And we see that the devotees in the pastimes of Krishna, which are described in the 10th canto, are indeed seeing like that. They are. And the word prasad is coming in these verses. Not so much daya, kripa, sometimes, but many times prasad. I wanted to first focus on the word anukampan. This word anukampan, it comes in the verse tatenukampam susamiksamano. That famous verse is explaining that one must be tolerant and that one must simply tolerate whatever comes, and in due course of time, then one will be eligible to receive the mercy of the Lord, that anukampam, that mercy of the Lord. So this is what I wanted to address. I wrote some things down once, just my own notes that I was thinking about. Well, tatenukampam, to tolerate the inevitable in life, voluntarily accept hardships for preaching, tapasya, as a part of sadhana. Yeah. Then I have something here that I will explain to you instead of here taking the notes. That there's the story of Parasuram, and who was approached by Karna. Karna, as we know, was the first son of Kunti, but by fate she was not brought up by him and brought up only by a chariot driver. And therefore, Karna was not really eligible to be accepted as a Kshatriya. So, therefore, Dronacharya would not accept Karna as his student. Although Karna, along with all the other princes, the Pandavas and the other Kuru princes, wanted to learn the art of fighting. So Karna was very determined. So therefore Karna approached Parasuram. Now Parasuram, he was like the guru in the art of fighting, but he never wanted to teach any Kshatriya. So therefore Karna went before him and told him he was a Brahmana. Right, the son of a Brahmana, and Parasuram accepted him. And he was very humble, he served him, etc. One day, the guru was sleeping with his head on the leg of the disciple. We remember that some insect came, stung Karna really bad in the leg, in such a way that his leg started bleeding. Right? It was very painful, obviously. And Parasuram all along was sleeping. When Parasuram woke up, he saw all the blood on the leg of Karna, and he said, "What happened?" And Karna said, "Some insect was stinging me like that. I got stung." And Parasuram said, "How could you tolerate?" He said, "Like, well, what to do? You were sleeping with your head on my lap, so I didn't want to disturb you. I didn't want to wake you up." All right. And then Parasuram turned around and said, "You are a Kshatriya. You are not a Brahmin. You are a Kshatriya. Only a Kshatriya could tolerate such a thing." Right? And okay, then he cursed him that at the time he needed it the most, he would forget the knowledge, etc. That's the rest of the story. We won't get into it. What interests me is that the Kshatriya could tolerate more than the Brahmana. So we have two types of tolerance. The tolerance of the Kshatriya and the tolerance of the Brahmana. And this is the theme that interests me and that I wanted to share with you. So we see the tolerance of the Kshatriya is tolerance on the strength of determination. The Kshatriya is just fixing his mind on his goal. And no matter what comes, hell or heaven break loose, he's gonna go on, he's gonna do it, and nothing's gonna deter him, and he's totally fixed. Right? Kshatriya. Right? Go, Prabhu, Kshatriya. Right? The Brahminical type of tolerance is much different. We see that the Brahmin did not have the, in Parasuram's judgment, did not have the same extreme level of tolerance. A Brahmin's tolerance comes in a totally different way. It comes from understanding. A Brahmin's tolerance comes from realization. It comes from knowledge, but not only knowledge. It comes from focused knowledge or realized knowledge. This is the point. It comes from honesty. It comes from understanding. It comes from the heart. It doesn't come from the books. The Brahmana has his knowledge from the books, but then he applies it in his own life and he understands which part of the scriptures apply to him. And in this way, the knowledge has become genuinely felt and experienced, and not only straight from the scripture, but also from his own heart, seeing, yes, how it is working. And in this way, the Brahmana comes in that mood, in that meditative mood. Right? Yesterday we spoke about prayer, or a prayerful mood is the same as a meditative mood. So starting with the prayer, there's that meditative mood, the mood from where am I and how am I actually coming up to the standards of the scriptures? How am I really going to represent them? The Brahmana then grows in acquiring the behavior of the scriptures, and after the behavior, he'll gradually develop the qualities of the scriptures. Then he is mature as a brahmana, and then his tolerance is relying on conviction, on a deep understanding. So he has his own personal strength and conviction. Such a brahmana, we see a description in the 10th canto of Garga Muni, who is being received by Nanda Maharaj for the name-giving ceremony, and there's a welcome. How nice. I'm very happy that a brahmana has come to visit, a saintly person. Such a rare occasion, right? 5,000 years ago, a rare occasion, yes. Nanda Maharaj is saying, so we understand that brahmana, in one sense, it meant that a brahmana was alone. It's very interesting. A brahmana was alone with his own purity. A brahmana stood out. A brahmana was living with his conviction. Not some sort of conviction from, well, this is the standard of the scripture and I'm gonna do it, you know. No. Deeply thought about it. Deeply felt. Deeply recognized in himself. Thought about it in the way I described yesterday. Going down in the levels, recognizing oneself. Right? Going into the inner room before Krishna. In this way, the brahmana is deeply in the mode of goodness. And from that platform, he can disseminate knowledge to people who are in other modes, right, without being affected by these modes. So this is very important for us, because obviously if we look at at ourselves, first of all, at our spiritual career up to this point, then we may be lacking some of that quality, that actual brahminical quality. Also, our movement as a whole has lacked maybe some of that, and maybe our determination has been too much driven by the kshatriya type of determination, you know, like, yes, we're going to do it, fix the mind, fix the goal, and just, you know, grit the teeth and do it. But that kind of determination, although very, very strong at times, may not necessarily last, right? The brahminical determination is more durable, because it's genuine. It comes from one's own realization and conviction within, and it is not related to the externals. But beating one's head against the rock again and again at one point gives everyone a headache. There's no doubt about it. So, therefore, we see that the brahminical type of determination or tolerance is of a different nature, and the brahminical mood is more one of spiritual self-sufficiency, right? Not independence, right? But yet, he doesn't constantly look for an external source of inspiration. He has actually got the conviction within himself. And this is exactly what we require and what we want in our movement. We want independent thinking individuals. Right? We do not want a movement where a small section has to always inspire a large section. That's not a healthy movement. A healthy movement is where the members are spiritually self-sufficient, in the sense that they know how to remain spiritually enthused, right? Which first of all must be from deep understanding. I have sometimes used an example about the leaking car tire. Sometimes you have that. A car tire, if it leaks a little bit, not too much, little air is leaking out, and, you know, you can stop at a petrol pump and put a little air, and then you can drive a few hours, and, you know, in the morning you put air, in the afternoon you put air, and you can still drive for a few days before you get it fixed, right? A slow leaking tire. So, every time you gotta pump it up. So sometimes we treat our hearing and chanting like that, you know. How do you feel, Prabhu? Oh God, you know, terrible, totally burned out. Did you read? No, I didn't read for 3 days. Oh, terrible, terrible. Quick, grab a book, you know, like, how does it go? A little better already. Yes, read more. And the tire fills up again, you know, like, yes, my tire is fully, are you ready? Yes. Go again. And until, like, you know, okay, and keep on pumping up the tire, yes. So this is not actually the proper process. This is not the function. The function is rather to go deep and to deeply understand and assimilate the knowledge for ourselves, right? Not to just associate with the scriptures and appreciate the transcendental nature of it, the purity of it, and get some inspiration. Wow, this is truly very noble. This is actually very nice. And that way one can pump himself up by appreciating what one's reading. But a deeper level is where we actually start to apply in our life and where we start to go into assimilating and develop our conviction. So, this is all part of taking the mercy, right? It's not just like, you know, read. Yes, I'll read one chapter a day, one chapter of Bhagavatam a day, you know, like, that's very good. I mean, if you can read one chapter of Bhagavatam a day, that's very nice. But then there's the other part, assimilation part, and the thoughtful part. Because when we're actually reading Bhagavatam, there are sections of Bhagavatam, every verse is almost the same as the previous verse, right? There's some section, you know, it moves very slow, very, very slow. You just go like, you get a verse and then a slightly different explanation of the same point, but a little different angle, same point, a series of 10, 15 verses on the same point, practically speaking. Sometimes you get these Bhagavatam classes, you know, and like, already goes for 2 weeks on the same point, and everyone's you've heard all the arguments now, the speaker is desperate trying to think of a new angle, right? Everything has already been said, you know, what to say now, right? After 15 days, the same verse. Somebody finally desperately just decides to do 10 verses in one day, right? And shoot right to the chapter. Everyone else is relieved, you know? All glories to you, right? For your bold steps. You remember these moments, right? But it shows that the Bhagavatam is not describing a story, right? The Bhagavatam is doing something else. The Bhagavatam is meditation. It's meditating. It's deeply meditating, just on different points and then from a little different angle, So it's like really thinking deeply, right? That's the purpose. So we have to assimilate and think about the consequences of what we read. Like a simple example is always, you're not the body. That is the classic example. And, well, you can either put it on your t-shirt, you know, I'm not the body, and then on the back, I am a spirit soul. Or you could go one step further and say, okay, I'm not the body. Yes. So what does that mean? What does it mean? It means that, like, well, that maybe the soul is more important than the body, right? If I'm the soul, not the body, my God, you know, that's a big adjustment in my life, right? I never treated it like that. I mean, yeah, so that's an immediate consequence. So, I'm not the body means taking the consequences of it, right? And we have only so many years in this body, why invest so much energy into it when there's the eternity for the soul? So, the maximum of energy should go for the soul, the minimum of energy to the body, right? When you really know you're not the body, for example, right? So the consequences, one has to think about the consequences. So it's not a matter of parroting. Right? Therefore, simply learning the philosophy by heart and passing an exam and having a title is nice because, you know, on lonely winter nights you can remember all the things you learned by heart, right? And repeat them to yourself. And maybe for a moment even think about something. But, you know, in reality, and unless we deeply think about our philosophy, we will not truly get the actual experience of it. So I guess I try to provoke some thoughtfulness, right, in first instance in this seminar. I also did it as an exercise for myself, like I'm not sitting here, although I sit on a very high platform, I'm not trying to pose myself here above all of you, pointing down that like, no, I did it in the preparation, a lot of thinking actually, a lot of meditating, and therefore I was thinking about how the determination of the kshatriya makes you tired, right? I've tried it myself. I tried it a lot, you know, grit my teeth and push, right? But eventually, you know, even I became tired, although, you know, I was pretty determined. Right? But it started to wear out, you know, and I started to think, like, what's next? You know, I became desperate. I think, now what, you know? Of course, I keep up the show, but internally, I'm definitely getting worn out, right? So what to do next, right? This is a real problem. So it is a fact. We have to, sooner or later, come to this other level, right, of determination, a deeper, more mature level of realization of determination. So if you'd like to give some feedback on that, that would be nice. If you don't, also good. Whew. Yes.
Can you speak in the microphone?
There's a microphone.
Our society is very big and...
very something, I couldn't hear.
Our society is big with different... There are varieties of devotees, and somebody can say that his aspiration is not to become brahminical, that it's very high, like too high for him or for her to achieve.
Right. You see, I was not advocating to become Brahmins, or I wasn't really addressing Varna Ashram. I just feel that every Vaishnava, sooner or later, right, whether one is externally engaged in the work of a Sudra, Vaishya, Kshatriya, or Brahmana, will have to assimilate these Brahminical, this Brahminical principle. Right? That is part of Vaishnav behavior. And if you don't do, you never fully manifest as a Vaishnava. We have to see that to really become a Vaishnava is a lifetime mission. It is a big growing process, and we all have to grow. So the thoughtfulness is really universal for all Vaishnavas, and is not related. That I took it from the Brahminical principles is because it is said, Tadara just tamo bhava kama lobhadiye. It is explained that in devotional service the influence of passion and ignorance are disappearing and that we come to the mode of goodness. Therefore, there are many parallels between the Brahminical way of life and the Vaishnav way of life. When a Vaishnav is at home, at peace, and he has nothing else to do, he will try, it is best if he takes shelter of the mode of goodness, of the Brahminical way of life and Brahminical activities. That is his best shelter for any Vaishnava. Then when he has to work, Right? He may work according to any other work. He may have to be a manager, and you know, or he may have to be a warrior, he may have to be a farmer, he may have to be a laborer. That's all right. But when he comes home, again, shelter in the brahminical activity. So, just like we don't ask in the morning, we ask all the devotees to come to the morning program. We don't just ask, are you brahminically inclined? Then please come to the morning program. No, all the devotees. See? So, our usage of Varna Ashram is actually external. Internally, we're all the same. Internally, we are all Vaishnavas who are trying to develop our dependence on Krishna.
My point was also not actually regarding Varnashram. I don't take that too, so much into consideration,
right.
But developing these particular qualities,
yes.
Which when I speak with devotees, especially with ladies,
yeah.
I hear from time to time, I'm not so thoughtful, I'm not so philosophical. And it's true that some devotees don't like to think very much.
Yeah.
I don't know why, but...
Yeah. Well, but then you become very dependent, you see. If you don't think so much, then when your little world goes upside down, then, my God, you know, I mean, we're closing the temple now. Prabhus, there is a problem, the finances haven't been going well, there is a bankruptcy, this is a very serious istakosti, we are so sorry. But we have been forced to sell the temple. My temple, I joined here. My whole spiritual life has been here. My deities, where will we go? Well, you know, your whole world collapses. What if your world collapses? Right? What if your husband leaves? Right? Then what? You don't like, you know, ladies, they may not like, some ladies may not like to think, but what if their husband runs off? What will they do? Right? If you've never thought about anything, then when the hard times are coming, then you freak out. No. Yes.
I think sometimes we equate thoughtfulness with scholarliness.
Yeah.
And they're very different things.
Yes.
When one is of the head and the other is of the spirit.
Right.
And, you know, so some devotees, women, men, may say, you know, I'm not a scholar.
Yeah.
Okay, that's one thing.
Yeah.
But to be thoughtful in our philosophy and to be able to apply our philosophy to our lives. There are many people who are scholars that don't have a clue. Look at the Brahmins and their wives in the Krishna Leela.
Yes, very nice.
One was very scholarly and they blew it.
Yeah.
The other was not very scholarly, but they had the point.
Yes.
So we all, I think, have to come to the point where we can internally apply the philosophy to our lives and not look at it as something outside of ourselves.
Right, right. Yeah, very nice. Thank you very much. Perfect. And yes, and if you just wonder, all right, that's very nice, but how to start, right? Then we start with that kind of process we talked about yesterday, some honesty, you know, where are we, right? Where are we? And if you see that we have anarthas, and it is described what to do about it, right? How to deal with it. And so we can recognize in our hearts how the things that are described in the scriptures are there, and we can also read about the remedies, and we can try and apply them, right? Six loving exchanges between devotees, six favorable items for devotional service, unfavorable items for devotional service from the nectar of instruction, for example, right? We have so many practical instructions, very practical. Any other question or comment? Okay, I'll try and focus again. So slow. Yes. Anyway, I particularly liked this definition of tatenu kampan, and Yeah, here I wrote then in my little notes, I was writing, should we keep a balance between cultivating the mode of goodness so that we can best offer service from a platform of personal well-being? I'm going to recap for 1 minute just to get Maharaj updated. Yesterday we spoke about prayer. There were many aspects about prayer, all kinds of a different analysis of prayer. For example, how it involves glorification, requests, benedictions, the motivation, either Admindriya, Krishnendriya, as a stimulus, following in the footsteps of the Vaishnava, so many things like that. One of the points was entering into the inner room, that prayer really means going into your inner room, that going into the inner room really means like becoming honest, seeing what is there. Honesty, we went through relating it to humility and seeing that, like, well, we start with, like, saying the first difficult thing to admit you're not a pure devotee. Go one step down, say, I've got an artist. Number three, make a list. Number four, really see how you're affected then by all the items on the list. By that time, you get pretty much, I think, the humility begins to dawn. And could go down further, right? Something like that. Anyway, so the whole idea was to create some more genuine connection between our philosophy and our real life, and to bring the two more together. And that's where we kind of begin today, with a focus on like being more, more focused, more centered, more in touch with our real roots in life and in the scriptures, like that. We've just gone through some definitions, and these definitions are then, we focused on anukampa for a moment, and the tolerance of the brahmana and the tolerance of the kshatriya, using the example of Parasuraman and Karna with the insect and the blood, and how determination will carry us so far, but realized tolerance will carry us further in the long run. And so we're exploring that element, how we should develop this kind of what I call spiritual self-sufficiency, and some sort of realization of the philosophy by which we can carry on our spiritual life. The main theme of our discussion is expanding the mercy in all directions, which is, I said yesterday, one might think that that means that it would be some sort of Sankirtan seminar, and that we would be like talking about conquering every town and village, and we are definitely talking about that, but at the same time, we are not so capable, you know, like who can conquer every town and village? Prabhupada told, that we should be careful that we don't make him Alexander the Great, right? Who conquered the world, and when he was around, he had to start again because he lost all the villages behind him. And we also might be, doing just that. And so, conquering the entire world is not a simple thing. Preaching is not a matter of propaganda. It's not a matter of quoting slokas or telling jokes, right? It's a matter of actually going very deep and speaking from the heart. Only then is it genuine and convincing, so one has to live it. Okay, so I've come to that. On the paper, I have one for Satyamani. No. I think my papers are finished. Maybe. Yeah. Yeah. Now it's page 1. It's page 3, sorry. So on page 3, there is these little diagrams with the circles. You can look at your neighbors. Huh? Okay, these diagrams with the circles, for the tape, I'll just explain it a little bit. It's a circle divided by horizontal lines into segments. So at the bottom, I've just made some areas. It starts at the bottom with pure ignorance. In the middle, I put mixed devotional service, next pure devotional service, and next confidential devotional service. The idea is that mercy is manifesting in different ways according to the particular position of the living entity. When a living entity is situated in the spiritual world or in spiritual consciousness, when he's a Jivan Mukta, either here in the material world or in the spiritual world, and he's aware of his eternal relationship with the Supreme Lord, then that mercy is manifesting more in the mood of prasad, as we were using our definitions earlier on. Then, and we, as I mentioned, we see in the descriptions in the 10th canto, if you look at the word mercy being used, it's practically all prasad, right? And everything is taken as prasad. And we see that Krishna is always merciful, also in the spiritual world. So mercy should really not just be taken in the sense of compassion, you know, like here we are helping the poor suffering creatures. This is mercy. No, it is just all Krishna's acts are wonderful mercy. It is causeless mercy because he's doing it out of his own initiative. But yet the devotee can also control Krishna and force Krishna sometimes, right? And that is the most wonderful thing. The most wonderful thing is to serve Krishna and to actually see how Krishna is reciprocating by not just giving some reward for the service, but by appreciating the service. This is what the devotee wants, right? The devotee wants Krishna to appreciate his service, right? No less, right? If Krishna just gives a reward, okay, you've been good, here's your candy. So, no, we don't want it, you know? We're not happy. No good, right? We don't want this reward, right? We want to see that the devotees in the spiritual world want to see Krishna's eyes glitter, you know, for their offering, whatever they've done, right? Whether it's a garland or whatever it is, but they want to see a glitter in Krishna's eyes, a smile, wow, this is fantastic. They want to see that Krishna gets enlivened. That's the only reward the devotees want. So it's not that devotees don't want a reward. We want a reward. Right? We really want a reward. We're totally eager for a reward, right? It's not that we are totally blank and say, no, we don't want anything in return for our service. Just the pleasure of Krishna. Yeah, but we want the pleasure of Krishna in relation to our service. That's what we want. Well, it doesn't have to even be direct. But if just we can help, you know, if we can help those who serve Krishna, that's good enough. That's good enough. We don't have to. If we bring the flowers and someone else makes the garland, like that Vajayanti mala that Krishna wears, it is actually, that's that long garland that reaches down below his knees. Srimati Radharani actually makes that every day. A fresh one, right? She makes a fresh Vajayanti mala for Krishna. That's her garland. Right? That's why he wears it. It's not just that he's porting a long garland across the knees, an extra long, to show he's the Supreme Lord. No, it's the one that Srimati Radharani makes. Yes. So it's very nice. So there, the devotees want prasad. They want like remnants of Krishna, something, mercy from Krishna, So that's the spiritual world, right? There is the stage where one comes to pure devotional service, just the stage of approaching one's eternal identity. This is technically sometimes described as the premaru rukshu states, the states of approaching prem, where one finally enters into his eternal identity. Well, in my little diagram, I made it like a little more narrow. I don't know these exact size of the segments are not really so relevant. It was just from the loose hand on the computer as it came, and I'm not so expert. Right? But I thought it should be a little smaller, because the Antaranga Seva is really like where it will end up. Now, for us, that's all very high and exalted, and in other seminars, we will understand a lot more about it, because since Bhakti Chaitanya Maharaj is explaining about the southern portion of the ocean of devotion, one can get so many insights on all the intricacies that exist on these higher levels. But in our case, we're speaking about mixed devotional service and the realm of pure ignorance, and how the mercy is manifesting there. Well, pure ignorance, we have been in it for a long time. And suddenly, and so much mercy was there in the midst of that. It's not that devotees have a monopoly on the mercy of Krishna. The mercy of Krishna is also coming into the lives of so many. So many things happen, right? That I have a little questionnaire which I will give out at the end of this seminar, and or at the end of this session. And the idea of that questionnaire is to find out how it happened in your life, right? How the mercy came. Just my curiosity, I'm collecting these things. And I'll use a little bit on the last day, just when I'm going to discuss realizations, etc. That's the idea. Okay, to make a long story short, in the realm of pure ignorance, the mercy of the Lord comes in various ways. There are scriptures in the world, all kinds of. There are different God concepts. There, the Ganges. The Ganges is going down even to lower planetary systems as the Bhogavati. So not just on our planet, even lower than our planet, the Ganges is also there. So in this way, the mercy of the Lord is manifesting into the realm of pure ignorance, where there's no concept of Krishna at all, even there. Sometimes I make the point is that I'm sure that our Sankirtan fleet has new vehicles in the form of flying saucers, right? I'm convinced that the extraterrestrials must have picked up the Maha Mantra by now with their antennas, right? And that they must have carried it also there. And that in this way our Sankirtan fleet is up to date. Even flying saucers are part of it. It's a personal conviction, maybe true or not, but I'm convinced it is, right? You don't have to buy into it, but you can't convince me it's not true. I'm sure the mercy of Lord Chaitanya is very great, and I don't think that these extraterrestrials could have escaped. You know, no way. I don't think so. Anyway, so in the realm of pure ignorance, I know that the mercy of the Lord is entering. Here, in our, somehow or other, by the mercy of the Vaishnavas, we've come into the realm of mixed devotional service. Now it is stated that the holy name, this is the second circle, right, reaches down very, very low, because there are really no conditions, right? It is available to all. If we look at other processes, there's always a condition, right? And therefore, it reaches down to a lesser extent. If you see the Vedic mantras, right, they require that one is brahminical, right? Therefore, we see two concentric circles. The center circle is showing how much the other process is extending down in towards the realm of pure ignorance, and it has its limitations. But the Holy Name has no limitations, although it goes down into the realm of pure ignorance in the form of Namabhas, in the form of its reflection. It's not going in its original form of the name, but it goes in the form of its reflection. Yes. It is said that as long as one is in mixed devotional service, the pure holy name is still not manifest. One is only chanting Namabhas, isn't it? But one should understand that that reflection of the holy name is of a different nature than the reflection, than the Namabhas in the realm of pure ignorance. It is of greater intensity. There is more effulgence. There is more reflection, more light, right? Obviously. Therefore, it's not the same type of Namabhas. We hear about these examples in Chaitanya Charitamrita, from the Puranas actually, about this Mohammedan who had been gored by the tusk of a boar, and dying, and called out the Arabic words, Harama, 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 what misery, what misery, what misfortune, and Harama, Harama, and got all the benefits from chanting the holy name of the Lord. Then it's even mentioned the example of halam riktam, two words, and ha and ri are separate, and even that counts, right? But that kind of namabhas, right, is not the same as the namabhas that is being chanted by the devotee. That is the main point. Looking at the time, I'm not gonna get so much into all that. I just wanted today to, with this little chart, point out that the Holy Name reaches out deeper than any other process and extends higher than any other process. That's the point of the diagrams, right? There are many, many details, and we would have to just take more time, so I can't get into it. But the Holy Name, we can, with under the nomer of other processes, we can fill in anything. I already filled in the Vedic process. We can also fill in Christianity. Recently, we were challenged in some program, and some Christian challenged and said, like, well, in your movement, you have to do a whole life of following regulative principles and chanting every day and so many austerities, right? So many rules, you know, like, I've been looking at it now for some time. You have your 64 rules and this offense, that offense, so many offenses. And in Christianity, all you have to do is accept, you know, Jesus, right? Just accept him and everything is all right. You know, then you try to be good, but if you fail, don't worry. Jesus, you know, is still there. He's kind, right? All you try is accept Jesus in the heart and try and be good. And if you can't, well, you know, it's okay. You tried, right? You tried. So you're okay, and you can go to heaven and all that. You can get the mercy. Right? So, isn't Jesus more merciful? So, some might, but why not? Because again, there are conditions. There's faith, you know. You have to have faith in Jesus, right? You have to accept him. The holy name, the Namabhas, extends down, you know, I mean, even people that stuff their fingers into their ears when the Harinam goes by, they have no chance, it penetrates, and even they are lost. Namabhas reaches out everywhere. There's no conditions, unconditional. Then after that, yes, if one wants to go deeper and deeper, then also, there are conditions, there's surrender, etc. But this is the point, right? It's unconditional, the mercy. So it extends very, very deep. That's the first point. And the second point is that no other process can take us to Golok and to the topmost platform of love of God as can be attained through the process of the Holy Name. That has to be understood. Devotional service, and in this age, the chanting of the Holy Name, is that process by which we can attain Golok. All other processes, Christianity, sometimes it says you can attain Brahma Loka, but which Brahma Loka? Right? Because sometimes the term Brahmaloka is referring to the highest planets of Lord Brahma, sometimes to the Brahman, but maybe Satchinanda Maharaj has some comment, no? Okay. But if you have, Maharaj, just, if anybody has, don't hesitate. I'm just fighting with time and some health problems. Krishna. I have a concussion, Maharaj. I mean, hit my head. So I'm like, huh? Yeah, you can try. I'm not a Christian. I never was a Christian. I never was a Christian man.
Neither. But now that you're talking about it, I have a question as to whether in the Christian doctrine, someone who, like for instance, the 12 apostles of Jesus Christ, those that took his teachings most seriously,
yeah.
Do they get the same outcome as somebody who, like you said, you know, charges it to their JC credit card and they try and it doesn't work, but it doesn't matter because they have the JC credit card in their back pocket and,
okay.
You know.
Yeah. No, definitely not. No, I was trying to say that one can attain Brahmaloka, and I was trying to define which Brahmaloka, but whatever it may be, whether it is the planet of Lord Brahma or whether it's above somewhere, the Vaikuntha regions at best, if you read the Bible, at least I've done that, although I never practiced Christianity, I'm so sorry, no culture. But there is a description of God sitting on the throne and being waved by the angels with the palm leaves, etc. Well, I mean, if that's not a Vaikuntha scene, you know, then I don't know what a Vaikuntha scene is, right? So even if they would attain Vaikuntha, okay, very nice, Aishwarya above, awe and reverence. So what is this problem with awe and reverence? What's against it, right? The whole point of it is it creates a great distance, of course. One can never be very close to the Lord, because all one's spontaneous feelings are just being checked by that respect that one is showing. So it is a problem in that way. So that's really the best that any of the great saints could have attained, and
and
so
those,
that puts it clearly in the smaller circle.
And those who, like you were describing, you know, well, if you accept Jesus, because I know people who, on Sankirtan, talking to somebody, they'll take out a card, you know, on May 28th. 2002, I accept Jesus as my Savior.
Yeah.
And then I try, but if I fail, well, it's okay, because so that person is going to attain something less, isn't it?
Yes, according
to Christian doctrine, that person is going to attain something less.
Well, you see, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said that the problem about Christianity is that it's obscure. And the other day, I was reading this book of this Christian professor called I Have My Doubts. And he said, you know, and he was dealing with all Christian doubts in there. Quite nice. And he was saying that the one problem is that in Christianity, we don't really have what you call a well-rounded, systematic theology. Right? So they don't have it. They really don't have it. They admit it. They don't have it. That's the problem. Whereas we have that, you know, whatever, there's many things we don't have, right, in terms of qualities, and there's many things we can learn, you know, even from the Christians, etc. But we have a well-rounded, systematic theology. We have it all mapped out, right, the whole thing. So Christianity is not clear. So it's very unclear, you know, what is really Christian? These kind of points. What you attain, in other words, there are so many opinions about it. Mm. They don't even know who Jesus is. I mean, that day, right? It's like there's a big: is he God or is he the Son of God? Is he Jiva? They don't know if he's God or if he's a Jiva. They don't know. So there's a lot of confusion. Exactly as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu stated, it's obscure. Mm. You know? Wow. There's lots of questions. Henry. At the end.
Maharaj, the spiritual world,
spiritual.
We all, I think we jiva try to go there.
Yeah.
And as far I thought, you can, if we reach, we can go into the spiritual world.
Yeah.
Is that true? And
yeah.
And then the other question is that we were just talking about reaching on a Brahma Loka, and is that in the spiritual world?
Uh-huh. Yeah. Okay. So the perfection of our process is indeed to attain the spiritual world. And through this movement, one can, if one develops spontaneous devotional service from the heart for the Supreme Lord, then one can attain Golok Vrindavan. If one is a person who is a good, pious person who follows all the standards and rules and regulations of Krishna consciousness very nicely, but never goes into the heart, then one can go to Vaikuntha, right, which is a little lower in the spiritual world. And Brahmaloka, there are, in the Bhagavatam, the term Brahmaloka is sometimes used for the planet of Lord Brahma. That is inside our universe, not the spiritual world, material, but the highest planet. And sometimes the term Brahmaloka is used for what is outside the material world and for the spiritual. So it's a little, so the term Brahmaloka can be a little confusing at times. And one has to read very carefully to understand which Brahmaloka is meant. But usually from the text we can understand, or otherwise the acharyas may clarify. So like that we can figure it out. But yes, if you chant Hare Krishna and very sincerely and follow four regulative principles, you can go back to Godhead. There's no doubt. You too. We too, not me. No hope. Yeah, I think I have to. I cannot open up another theme. My brain is. It is 12 o'clock. Is anyway the time to stop. And yeah, I want the prayers. And what else? See. I did have something here about internal and external reasons of for Lord Chaitanya's appearance, which I thought I wanted to point out that from our perspective there's a difference, but that from in Lord Chaitanya's mood, these, you can't really separate the two. Lord Chaitanya came into this world for the internal reasons are he came to experience the mood of, or the position of Srimati Radharani. He came to taste his own qualities. And, here goes the brain. And the third one, he came to experience the happiness of Srimati Radharani. Those are the three aspects of the internal. Now, while he's doing that, it's said simultaneously, occasionally, or incidentally, the time arrived to give the mercy to the conditioned souls. But we have to understand that giving the mercy to the conditioned souls really means bringing all these conditioned souls to the eternal pastimes of Krishna. And it means to increase the ecstasy of the pastimes of Krishna. So how can one say that one is, that one is to do with like the ecstasies and the other one not. They all are related. So in this way, even the preaching is also, you could say, increasing the Ras Lila. Right? So it's very rasic, right? Actually, very rasic. Yes, it's the most rasic. Right? On the other hand, one may say, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, at the end of his life, was in Jagannath Puri, totally absorbed in his internal ecstasies, etc. And, but, I would like to point out that that was also preaching, because he did that here on our planet, right, in our universe. So that's also preaching. He's showing us here now the more, this is the preaching to the more internal preaching, the more advanced preaching to the devotees. But it's still very much preaching. It's the preaching to us now. Well, us means like only to theoretically understand it and more advanced devotees in a more practical way. So, although these two purposes are separated, one can actually not separate them. And this is an important principle, because the most internal experiences are available within the preaching. That's just as a footnote. The main point today was that unless we deeply drink the mercy ourselves, right, we cannot become avaya media. To be avaya media doesn't just mean that we have to be here and let it all just flow through us, but to be avaya media means we have to really go before Krishna in all humility, with all endeavor to please him, and then the reciprocation is there, and then we can turn around and give. Right? And then we are the avaya media. So there, it's not just an automatic kind of flow, but it is really like to be the avaya media, we have to make that effort, and then we will be. Okay, if someone has a last question or comment, then I'd be happy. Henry wants a last. Yes. The love of God. The love of God that makes us enter to the spiritual world. Yes, it is. Like Krishna lifts us. He takes us into the spiritual world and we purchase him with our love. Love for Krishna develops if we begin to understand who he is, right? If we begin to see how kind he is, how merciful he is. So the more we realize how merciful Krishna is, the more we can actually begin to appreciate him and eventually love him, right? So therefore one first has to get to know Krishna, right? To really appreciate him, love him. Then that love will purchase Krishna. Then he will take us to the spiritual world, just like that. Not Krishna. Saint Augustine in his writing speaks of love of God, right? And establishes that as the objective. So they see also two aspects. They see that God is distributing love, and they also see that from the devotee up to him there must be love. So it's not that we are the only ones who are speaking of love of God, but unless you know Krishna, right, you cannot fully understand love of God, you see, because you have to know his qualities, you see. So you can know, you can love an aspect of him, but you cannot fully love him until you really understand his qualities. Therefore, within a few days, we will focus on the qualities of Krishna on the fourth day, right? We make that our meditation. Right, to go a little, still a little deeper. Tomorrow we want to go on with the chanting of the holy name, and there's so much you can say about the holy name, but the thing I would like to say is address the topic of inattentive chanting, because that being the root cause of all offenses and that being our main problem, I mean, that's the thing, that's the nut we want to crack. It's very hard. And some or other, there is one type of nuts that only gorillas can crack. No one else can eat, but gorillas can eat, you know. It's their snack, right? And yet, this nut of inattentive chanting, even gorillas can't crack. So hard. So I would like to, somehow or other, make an attempt to crack that nut, to make it tomorrow. Thank you very much.